come, what don't. Oh, hey, y'all.
You should not that podcast.
That reminded me of Along Came Polly, that guy that played the Jesus Christ Superstar. He's like,
oh. We're learning a lesson right now, everyone. Not to drink coffee while you're podcasting.
Oh, my God.
You may accidentally spit it on the laptop.
But what is it? You know, week six?
I think so.
It might only be week five, but it feels later.
Feels like week eight.
No, it can't be week eight. I still have to finish my prospectus.
No, it's not week eight. Because that's the week of our conference, our Ethnic Studies God's Monsters and the Dead conference.
God's Monsters and the Dead?
Ghosts!
Monsters and the Dead. Ghosts.
I have had a little bit of God on the mind today.
Yeah, me too.
So I guess that's
what we should...
So the title of our podcast today is...
Oh, Onward Indigenous Soldier.
That's great. Love it.
We took some pictures with Leroy's arsenal. I don't know what you... Armory.
Yeah.
that we'll put on the website.
Yeah, so I guess from what we've decided, we're gonna talk about religion and God today because... For some reason, the Ethnic Studies Department at UC San Diego decided to bring in two Pacific Islander SDA students.
Which translates to Seventh-day Adventist. Both Miguel and I grew up in the Seventh-day Adventist church / religion, ironically.
And we've always thought that to be very weird. And then there's also a very strong discourse on Pacific Islanders being very religious also.
And Natives, actually.
And Native Americans, too.
Oh, hell yeah.
And so, because Madel has started reading her Bible regularly again, in hopes of finding the secret to her methodology.
It's a miracle.
It's a miracle. I don't really know why I've been reading the Bible. I just have. And I don't know. It's just one of those things. This quarter, I've been very going up and down emotionally, and then some of my friends are going through rough times, and so somehow the topic of religion and God and spirituality has come up many times, and I find myself even listening to the radio, the church radio. I know, but I think that it's interesting in that. I have to sort of reconcile that part of my life with what I'm doing today and how that all connects and links up with each other. And then the history behind, you know, religion in Palau. But anyway.
We should talk about that then. We should each kind of talk about religion in our lives. I don't know, how it's influenced us or something. And then...
I was thinking of it because we last time we did our podcast, Leroy and I had been sick for a week and we thought we were better, and then we got slammed for another 2 weeks, and I guess we just ran out of stuff to talk about, and I don't know. Oh, I know what happened. I read him Heidi, and I have a real affection for moralistic, old-timey children's stories. I love it. Five Little Peppers, Heidi, Little Women. I honestly, like, the more moralistic, the better. Anne of Green Gables.
Oh, I love Anne of Green Gables.
And they're wonderful books. And so he loved Heidi. And it's a really Christian book. She learns to read. And the whole thing about the Almuncle is is about redemption and acceptance and that you can come and be forgiven for your transgressions. And so anyway, I got him to, he asked me if we could see the movie. So we checked out the Shirley Temple version. And he thought she was adorable.
She is. Shirley Temple is cute.
I was surprised he liked it so much. But then the story goes just crazy and it completely veers from the book. And then there's one that's a few years old, that cute little Irish girl from In America, and she's Heidi, and that still isn't, I mean, they don't make it as Christian as it was, but anyway, Leroy says, Mama, will you tell me a story from the Bible? like desperately sought in my head for a story because I wasn't raised religious at all. I mean, I was raised, we went to ceremonies occasionally. I mean, I remember my biological father's grandparents teaching us the Lord's Prayer, but until my mom started being involved with the Indian community in Oregon, we really didn't, I mean, she didn't go to church, and her experiences with church weren't great at all. And so, but then when I became an adult, I was baptized Catholic, and I went back to church and went to the classes and was confirmed and did all that and made my parents and family crazy. Because I think they thought I wasn't going to be Indian, you know, that I was making a choice, like, and because my mom made me a beautiful star quilt, you know, and I really thought it was, you know, of course, because she loved me, but because she wanted, I mean, to give me something that said, this is who you are, at the same time I was doing this other thing. So when Leroy was about 2, it just became impossible to go to church. For me, and I stopped, and then with school and grad school, we just haven't really gotten back to it, and I miss it. Anyway, so he says, tell me a story from the Bible. Well, I pull Noah out. I managed to tell that one, and he's like, that was good. Do you have another one? I was I mean, I know there's some good ones. I was like, well, you just think on that one,
and
I'll get back to you. Mister.
Oh,
so anyway, I was thinking about talking about this, because I know some people think too that if you're Christian, you're colonized, you know, that it's one of the same thing. Whereas to me, it seems like there's a lot more complex relationship between any kind of like indigenous like relationship to our cultural religious practices and the Christian ones that we have chosen or adopted or been, you know, I mean, coerced, sure, but then there's also this layering, right? I mean, of practices. I guess the way I resolve it personally is that I think that, God is basically one, you know, and if I cross myself, I'm not denying my, any kind of, like, indigenous spirits that are, you know, with me, and, but it's also incredibly personal, and I wouldn't want to talk about it in a way that would leave anyone open to attack or to being, hurt. I am on a few lists online where people talk about stuff, and one thing that comes up is like, if you're Christian, then you know you're basically like you cannot be for decolonization, and I mean, it's too simple. What I wish we could talk about too is Andrea Smith's book, mm-hmm. Unlikely Alliances, because when she came to visit last year, and an interesting thing happened because that book. She does come out and say that she's Christian, which I think is just awesome and brave and super cool. with the grad students waiting to meet her, when we were up in the grad lounge, it was like 5 women, and we all started talking about our religious practices. Like, that doesn't happen that often in ethnic studies, that when 5 of us or more are gathered, we start to talk about God, you know? Race, professors, this, that, or the other, our work, but not, you know, it doesn't surprise me that it was a indigenous professor that that spurred that conversation exactly. Yeah. All right, I'm good.
Oh, so I already mentioned before that I've been going through this very strange thing where I've been reading the Bible and sort of reading through a lot of religious texts. But the reason why it seems so, I want to say hypocritical at times, because for the longest time I haven't engaged in that part of my life, and yet it's so much a part of my life, strangely enough. So a little background about my religious life. My father is an avid, he practices our indigenous religion in Palau, which is called Modak Ngay. And so I grew up partly with that religion, and we went to all the activities and ceremonies and whatnot. So, I mean, those things are very clear in my mind. And it was a way of life. I really didn't realize that it was a religion. I just sort of thought it was a way of life as a Palawan, right? And then my mother was an avid Seventh-day Adventist. And so we did the church thing also until I was 8 when my parents got divorced. And so, you know, we had to put on the little skirts and dresses and, you know, go to church and be quiet little children and memorize our memory verses and do the Pathfinder, you know, pledge and all these activities, which were really fun. And I mean, I learned a lot of biblical stories and verses out of the Bible, and they've stayed with me, right? But I tell you what, I have a really strong feeling towards the Seventh-day Adventist Church, maybe towards religion in general as an organization or structure. I just think that it's too racist, to say the least. I mean, I could remember, I went to elementary school at the Seventh-day Adventist Mission School, and I remember having to line up in the morning, and they would come and check underneath our nails, in our hair, to make sure we didn't have like lice and dirty nails. You know, it was like a hygiene thing. So for me, the religion, that part of the religion, was sort of condescending and patronizing, and I didn't like it. And you know, at that time, they were still doing, is it called corporal punishment?
When you spank them?
Yeah. Yeah, when I was in third, fourth, fifth grade, they still practiced that. And I remember distinctly having my mouth washed out with soap many times for speaking my language. And so if you notice, most of the children who go through that school system, they're very strong in speaking the English language. And many of them do not actually know Palawan. So I'm very resentful towards that part. And I also remember never learning the history of my people or my culture, but I sure knew who the President of the United States was, where Disneyland was located, and you know, a lot of those sort of Western popular
landmarks.
Yeah, landmarks and things like that. So I was it was extremely easy for me to go to Guam and then go to school there and be able to assimilate, quote unquote. And then move to the United States and you know, fit in, because they did a good job in preparing us back home. So, but then when I went back home for high school, I actually went to a Catholic high school and got baptized Catholic, to my mother's dismay. And it was a big deal to her, because she thought her side of the family would, you know, really look down upon her and me. And but then they ended up showing up at my baptism, which was really cool. And my grandfather and his brother sort of started the Seventh-day Adventist Church in Palau, so it seemed like a big deal to her, but it really wasn't. I think my grandfather was just happy that I was engaged at all at that time, because of course a 16-year-old could do a lot of other things. But anyway, so that's my background in religion, and so I have all these different layers of godly things in my head, and in my spirit, but I'm very spiritual, and I don't know that that's the same as being religious. So I deal with that all the time. I'm trying to find ways to like work out the contradictions that I constantly feel. Even with my work in ethnic studies now, I just find it terribly hard to learn about the histories of different folks, and then knowing how I grew up having those similar experiences. So anyway, it's a process. Mm-hmm. But it's Miguette's turn.
Let's see here. I don't know. My history, well, Guam is primarily a Catholic island, and so it was like 100% Catholic 100 years ago, and now it's still 85 to 90% Catholic right now. But then my family was one of the first families to become Protestant when Protestant missionaries came to the island. And then after World War II, we were one of the first families to become Seventh-day Adventist when Seventh-day Adventist missionaries came to the island. And so it's created an interesting experience for those in my family, because the majority of Chamorros are Catholic, and the majority of my relatives, at least extended relatives beyond my great-grandfather's children, they're Catholic. And so a lot of the kind of the consistency or the binding or the glue of social relationships in Guam revolves around church activities, because so much of social life, you know, because that's the way of the Catholic Church, that's the way that they colonize so many places, is to make sure that the social network, the social landscape, the social clock is all run through the church. And so that continues to this day, in that you see your relatives at christenings, at funerals, at church, at mass. And so because my family was Seventh-day Adventist, we kind of had a weird relationship with the larger kind of social Chamorro network. So sometimes we may, like, never really go to mass because we weren't Catholic. But funerals, yes, we would go to funerals and christenings and stuff. But it just created this weird experience for me, because on Guam, you assume that most Chamorros assume that Catholicism is part of Chamorro culture and that they're kind of intertwined. And it was always difficult for me to articulate to people that it is a huge part of Chamorro culture, even if you're not Catholic, but not being Catholic doesn't deny you the right to be Chamorro, or it doesn't assume that, it doesn't say that you have to be those two in order to be Chamorro. But I never deny the impacts. But, I mean, so I'm Seventh-day Adventist now, but I don't go to church except when I'm on Guam, and then I go with my grandmother. Because it's really, it's the same, I don't know, it's the same thing, it's that it's kind of, my religiousness is kind of like, it's a respect now for elders. It's not really for me. I mean, I went to the same sort of schools that Madel went to. Fortunately, there was no corporal punishment when I was there, but there was still no Guam history, no Chamorro language or anything like that, and it still was kind of a strange whiteness privileging, America privileging space. But still, I mean, I have fond memories of some of those things. Like, I really respect my church because there was a lot of civic engagement. Like, a lot of churches talk about those things in the United States, like, you know, preference for the poor, helping the poor, you know, helping communities and stuff, but don't actually do it. And so I was so glad that my church actually did those things. And so when I was in Pathfinders, we did some of those things, even if it freaked me out going door to door and collecting cans from people. But now, like all of us, kind of religion has a weird place in our lives, whether intellectually and politically, because there's always, in Native communities, there's always this strong discourse that, especially amongst intellectuals, is that religion, you know, cancels out prospects for decolonization, or religion continues the cycles of colonization. And I remember one time when I was in a class at the University of Guam, and this one Chamorro scholar came up, and she basically said that Chamorros today who are Catholics are fools. They just continue the colonization. They're just dupes. Because now we know that it was forced on us, And so those who continue to go to the church and those who continue to do these things are just colonizing themselves. And so, in one way of thinking, so sure, she's absolutely right. This was imposed on Chamorros and stuff. But then, of course, the basis for her logic is that the real Chamorro existed at that point prior to the imposition of religion, of this Catholic religion. And so therefore, decolonization is only about that one point. And anything which doesn't have fidelity or loyalty or doesn't do justice to that one point is just not decolonization. It's just continuing colonization. And so I remember telling people when they were talking about that, thinking after class, thinking, yeah, what's this? Like, this is kind of true and stuff. And I remember saying that, well, you know, decolonization is this, it's this multitude of processes, and it can work different ways. And so decolonization is also about tampering with that logic that says that decolonization is about that point way back in time. And if you can break that logic, you can actually do far more than getting rid of Catholicism from the island. Because if you can break that logic that says that you only existed at that point, or that's the only point that you ever really existed in an authentic state, then you can basically open up the future to you. Because on Guam, and this is a very, I write about this, but it's hard to talk to people about this, but it's like, if you look at the way Chamorro identities are, it's really the United States, which is God. Like, patriotism towards the United States is like the religion now. It's what governs and structures life, is that you have this loyalty to the United States. It liberated you. It gave you life. It gives you happiness. It gives you indoor plumbing. It gives you electricity. It gives you education. It gives
hygiene.
You English language. Oh, hygiene. How... If without the United States, how would you brush your teeth? Seriously, how? And so this relationship with the United States is structured as if it's almost a religious experience, because if you think about Catholic religious processions that take place and still take place on Guam, there's also the procession of Liberation Day on Guam, where there's this massive parade, and there's the spectacles of carnivals, there's beauty pageants, and it's to celebrate the United States' return in World War II. Hmm. And so, basically, I'm more interested than decolonizing, getting rid of religion, is getting rid of that point where God sits. I mean, where the United States sits at the end of history as the God that dictates future, the God that controls future, the one that says that you are ready for sovereignty, you are ready to be prosperous now, you are ready for life. And the only way that you can do that is by breaking and decolonizing that logic that says that decolonization, that authentic indigenous experiences, is about retrieving that point way back in the past where anthropologists, where historians, where sociologists, where whoever says that you actually existed.
Amen.
Yeah, we're nodding. That's some good stuff there, we get.
Sorry.
But I do want to say, though, that, you know, in the way that Miguel described the imposition of religion on our islands, I also believe that there was agency among our people in terms of adopting certain aspects of those religions in our, you know, cultural practices. Because, you know, I was talking to my grandmother. This is my father's mother who raised me, and she... was telling me that in Modaknye, she's like, you know, our ancestors have always been open to all religions, and if you really study Modaknye, you will find that there are many similarities with and practices within Modaknye to, like, many, many religions that have, you know, crossed our path in history. And so... to me, what she was saying was that, look, you know, we weren't idiots and they just forced this stuff on us. We actually decided for ourselves that, hey, these are valuable things that we need to adopt into our lifestyles. And so they went ahead and did that. So there was some agency, and but of course there's also the imposition of the structures of religion that I feel, you know, we still see remnants of today. And they're more visible than you know, the other stuff that they adopted and we now use within in our indigenous practices. So I just want to say that so that to give credit, you know, to our peoples. But yeah.
Or Angie, what were you saying earlier about the Urbana Champagne?
Oh yeah, I was saying I just saw this morning that that performances of the mascot Chief I've only seen that movie a million times. Alimiwik? It's you know when you're against something too. It's not like you're and it doesn't you know mean anything anyway. Yeah, that they're gonna stop. Performing when their season ends on Wednesday, and they still have the mascot. Yeah, and he's the symbol still.
They're just not going to perform that
the dance
that during the halftime game.
Yeah, but still, I'm surprised because the maybe because I watched that movie,
the documentary. Yeah,
like 3 times as an undergrad. Professor Brian Klopotik was very fond of that movie. it's a good movie. Because I wasn't really thinking about mascots, you know? And I was like, mascots, not very important. And then I was like, wait a second. Yeah, this is really offensive. And the alumni, you know, the structure, the school, government, they all seemed so wedded to it. So I was surprised that they got even this far with stopping the performances. But I was reading an article in the online about it before you guys showed up. And they were saying that there, you know, that there's been growing pressure on the university that sort of surprised me that it was having such a strong effect. Mm-hmm. So, it's good. That's the coffee maker says it's not going to keep the coffee hot anymore. So, sorry.
We should tell people how excited we are about the conference in May.
We are.
Oh, yeah. And this is the conference in Oklahoma, right?
Indigenous Studies.
And we're going in with a bunch of very important people.
Yeah.
I'm so scared.
I know. Robert Warrior sent out the email with the times and
the schedule,
yeah, the schedule though for the panels. So you can check it out on the website.
I'll put a link.
Okay, good.
I'll put a link up on our blog. Yeah, because, people should know it's a very big deal to have all of those scholars together and then sharing work. And then, this.
And then there's us.
Yeah. And then there's Maude. Yeah, we're presenting right before the banquet on Saturday.
So the last one.
Everybody will be getting there, brushing their hair and ironing their nice clothes. And, so we're going to have a panel about ethnic studies and indigenous studies.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, we'll at another podcast we'll talk about our papers.
Okay, good.
What we're gonna present on. It should be good. I mean, they. I don't know if Robert Warrior says he's excited about everyone's panels, but he said that he was excited about ours.
And we're excited.
And Angie got like massive goosebumps when she read that.
I did. Well, plus, you know, my mentor from University of Oregon Ethnic Studies, Brian Klopotik, is going to be there, and he's presenting on a panel with his friend, Taya Miles, who I've never met, but her book, Ties That Bind, has been just a hugely influential book, and I'm using it in a paper right now for me, and just, you know, they're doing the Native Women's Feminism panel, and that's going to be so cool.
I know, I can't wait.
I'm going to send my son home to his grandparents to visit, so I'll be footloose and fancy free. I know, and I'm thinking we're going to definitely have to set up some karaoke, y'all. All
right. Yeah, we will be podcasting from there, too.
We have to.
Yes.
Hey, maybe we could have a special guest. Oh, good Lord. We'll have, like, special
guests.
Oh,
my God.
yeah. We good should idea. Send out the, like, the request ASAP. They might have plans.
We'll just be dragging people back to our suite, where it's our suite at the Sooner Hotel, which I
it's
booked.
A two-bedroom suite, thank you very much. Yes. We're high-rolling.
With a microwave. Come check us out.
It'll be so awesome. We'll be luring Phil DeLoria up to our suite to podcast.
Oh, no. That'd be awesome. Robert Warrior, Phil DeLoria. Oh, but, just sing, though.
Yeah, wait, so we should sing to end now. Okay. So what?
We
didn't decide anything.
Yeah. We should sing Outcast.
What? Wait, the song Outcast? Or...
What?
Hey. That was brave of you to jump in. Put the microphone on.
I actually had the, I have Karaoke Revolution set up in the PlayStation because I thought we might need a little background singing, but I hadn't decided what, I mean,
what songs do you have on there?
Oh, gosh. Jeez Louise. Long was making fun of me yesterday. He was going, Jeez Louise, I don't know. You know.
Let's pick a song.
Beat
what
it.
Song?
Beat it? I don't have the right song.
That's
on.
Leroy's favorite song. So, I don't know. We should just close this out, though, with a little bit of a... I can't believe that Maguette doesn't know love is a battlefield.
Well, I don't know any. I just know that line.
Oh, you know some songs.
I just know that line. Oh, I know songs, yeah. But, Oh, no. We're leaving dead air.
No dead air.
No.
Madel, no dead
air. Madel, talk about your project quickly.
Yes.
My project is in limbo. I have been writing, but not writing cohesively. Some people say that's still productive, but I'm not sure about that because I want to see a paper. And so we'll see what happens in the next week. I work better under pressure.
Are you sure?
So all the exams and papers are starting to roll in for the classes I'm TAing for. And then I know that I have to write this prospectus. So I think I'm going to end up writing here pretty soon. Stressing myself out. But we'll see what happens. So they're going through the PlayStation list of songs and trying to figure out what we're gonna sing. What are we? I Will Survive. Yeah.
Maguette picked it.
Yay.
Because I know that song.
Okay, good.
Well,
let's
I
sing
know
it
too.
Sing it.
I was there.
I loved it in Coyote Ugly.
I loved it in eighth grade. Here we go.
Where are the words?
They're coming.
Ready?
They're
At first, oh man, she changed the channel.
At first I was afraid,
I was petrified. Kept thinking I could never live without you by my side. And then I spent so many nights thinking how you did it wrong. And I grew strong. And I learned how to do something wrong. And now you're back. Yeah, people actually do listen to our podcast.
People
do.
Which,
no, play it so we can always have that background music.
Let's say goodbye now, everybody.
Okay.
Now that I've blinded and deafened some people with my singing.
I just wasn't sure if we really get people listening.
No, we do. We get about...
Weren't you the one who tried to hurt me with goodbye? Did you think I'd crumble? Did you think I'd lay down and die? Oh, no, 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 no. I will survive. Oh, as long as I know how to love, I know I'll stay alive. I've got all my love to live. I've got all my love to give, and I'll survive. I will survive.
Hey,
hey! Thanks, people.
Thank you. Okay,
bye.
We're really sorry. The quality is supposed to get better the more we do it. We will get better, though.
It is getting better.